When people work together, they get more done. When people work together, they save time and money. That's why every Macintosh computer comes with networking built in. Sort of makes you wonder why other computers don't.
Best 30 plus minute album conversation you're gonna hear all week long. I'm your host, Aaron Elijah. Joining me today, I can hardly believe I'm about to say this, but he is going to be releasing his 45th Apple book. Leander Caney is here.
Hello.
Is it 45?
Yeah, it's pretty close.
It's pretty close, right?
425, right.
425, right. My mistake. I haven't read all of them, but I'm working my way up. Also with us, now that the book is done, he's hoping he'll stop seeing large clumps of Leander Caney's hair littered about the office. Lewis Wallace is here.
I can finally put away the broom. It's great news.
It's going to be a lot safer around the office. They're easy to slip on, aren't they? You step on one of those big clumps and you just slide all the way across.
Yeah, and I'm also a lot of slick spots from the tears and things, you know, so.
Tears, yeah. Leander, are you less stressed now that the book is almost done?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, what most people don't know, we always joke about this, but do you even enjoy writing books?
No,
like, they're kind
I
of like
it.
The bane of your existence.
Yeah, I absolutely hate it. I hate it.
And it's like going to the dentist every single day and having your teeth drilled.
Oh, it's worse than that.
All the hours that you had to dump in, making sure that Lewis finished the book for you. I mean,
that's right.
And you're constantly nagging him, make sure you proofread it. Take your name off this. No one can know
Lewis,
that you wrote this book.
Misspelled Tim again.
There's only one I in Tim, Lewis. How hard is that? All right. Well, we're going to be talking much more about Leander Caney's book towards the end of the show. And Leander had a great idea. He said, hey, why don't we start talking about my book once a week until we release the book? And that way we could sprinkle some crumbs. Because I know a lot of you have been asking when his book is going to be out and what it's going to be about and all that stuff. So we'll fill you in on all that towards the end of the show. We also got tons to talk about. We have a WWDC keynote date. Well, we have the dates for the WWDC event, so we think we know the keynote date. We also have the date confirmed for Apple's next press event, which is March 25th, right around the corner. I bet you're thinking, hey, what are they going to release? And also, is the TV streaming service, is it going to suck? Because I have a feeling that it might actually suck. And I saw some news this week that for the first time since we've been talking about the Apple TV streaming service got me excited. And I thought, uh-oh, this actually seems like Apple might have something up their sleeve to get people interested in this. I'll tell you what that is. Before we dive into the stories, let me say thank you to Squarespace for supporting this episode. Squarespace.com/cultcast. If you need a website, I have two Squarespace websites and I love them because they're easy to set up. They're easy to get going. You can manage them by yourself or you can bring in contributors to help you manage the content. Everything's drag and drop. It's beautiful. It looks good on any device that visits because they customize everything behind the scenes to optimize your site for all the devices that will be visiting your website. You can sell products and services of all kinds. You can have a blog. You can have a photography website. You can showcase your videography. I mean, if you want to showcase your work online, you really need to check out a Squarespace website. And this is also something that I thought I wanted to bring up because no one ever touches on this. You might notice Squarespace sponsors a lot of content. If you watch stuff on YouTube, if you listen to podcasts, and you might think to yourself, man, these guys are everywhere. And I just wanted to highlight that Squarespace is a company that really likes to support creators, and they definitely don't need to be everywhere. In fact, I would guess some of the content that they're supporting actually doesn't make them very much money in return. They just do it because they like to contribute to the community, which I really appreciate. They've been with us forever. So I always say, not just because Squarespace is really a good service, but if you need a website, go check out squarespace.com/cultcast. You're supporting Squarespace, which is supporting the community of the content that you consume. And you can use code cultcast at checkout. You'll get 10% off your first purchase. And if you order a year of service at once, you get an additional discount and a domain name. squarespace.com/cultcast. Apple has revealed the WWDC 2019 date. It is June 3rd. Through June 7th, and all I have to say is thank God. It's been so slow, Lewis. I mean, we've just been We've been squeezing together a show every week with limited stuff, and finally we're going to have some stuff to talk about. And if you're interested in purchasing a ticket, it's only $1,600 per person, and there's going to be a raffle. So even if you wanted to throw your $1,600 at Tim Cook, he doesn't even want it. The guy's got so many people who are dying to get in. You could throw your money right at him. You could wrap it in a wad and literally throw it at him, and he'll just keep walking. It'll hit him in his probably he has a six pack. I'm imagining. He gets up and goes to the gym every morning at 3, and it's just going to slide off and hit the ground, and he's going to keep going. So you got to do the random selection process. We're expecting to see iOS 13, macOS 10.15, watchOS 6, and tvOS 13. Man, it's impossible to keep these all straight now with all these numbers. And that's all we know right now. Are we going to see hardware? You know, we just don't know yet. It's possible, but I think we are going to see some hardware at the March 25th event, which is, what, a Tuesday or something? It's right around the corner. And before we started recording, Lewis was like, we kind of already touched on all this stuff before, but let's just go ahead and condense everything that we've talked about, Lewis, for the March 25th event. What can we expect? What are we going to see? Why don't you take it away? Because I feel like I'm a freight train. I just keep talking.
Yeah.
I can't stop myself. Just take it,
freight
please.
Train of please. News. Yeah. Well, it's going to be showtime. Showtime on March 25th, and it's a Monday, and this is going to be at 10 in the morning Pacific time, this big media event. You know, it's going to be about their TV series, their TV service, whatever. I mean, they've got this galaxy of content they're producing, and everybody knows it. All the deals are out there, and, you know, they've signed this person. They've signed something with Spielberg. They've signed something with J.J. Abrams and Jennifer Aniston, all these different people. And nobody knows what it's really going to look like. Nobody knows what the actual service will be. It really sounds like instead of, you know, just trying to be like Netflix, it's going to be more like Amazon Prime video where you can subscribe to other sources, you know, and it becomes more of like a clearinghouse for all these different things, and it, which is kind of what the Apple TV app already is, right?
Well, that's what I was thinking. So how would that be different? That was originally what I was thinking, and I was like, why is that exciting in any way? It's not really. So what you're saying is instead of going to the HBO app, instead of going to the Showtime app, you can use all that content inside of their TV service, and it shows up next to Apple's content, so you don't have to go, like, it's so onerous to have to go to the HBO app and look up the content there.
Well, it is, because, you know, they're all silent, aren't they? So you don't really know what's going on. I mean, that's the one good thing about, you know, the TV app and actually, you know, like at home with my Xfinity service, you know, you can just search Xfinity and it'll search Netflix, Amazon Prime, you know, a bunch of other ones. So, you know, you don't have to go digging around for this stuff.
Okay, but that's not really revolutionary or exciting in any way. I mean, Comcast is doing it. Right? So, yeah. I mean, if they're pulling together an event just to announce that, I mean, someone sit on a whoopee cushion, because that's going to be my reaction.
I mean, you know, I'm guessing they're going to show clips of these shows. You know, I think it's going to be like Comic-Con, you know, like here's 3 minutes of the new Jennifer Aniston comedy we've got coming. Here's, you know, they'll probably trot out some of these stars.
Sounds like a lot.
What?
Sounds like a lot. And 3 minutes sounds like a lot.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's what they're going to do, right? They're going to try and razzle-dazzle us with little glimpses of what they got in the pipeline.
Right,
but word on the street is that none of these things are actually, like, ready to be rolled out. So they're just having this big event, I don't know, get us started thinking about it. I mean, I've been thinking about this a lot, and it's like, what are they going to bring to this that's going to be different? What's going to make it unique and really awesome? I mean, I guess one thing that makes it unique is it's, you know, the TV app is right there on every iOS device. It's on your Apple TV. I mean, in that way, it's kind of like Apple Music, right? You know, they've got, I always thought, well, what's so different about Apple Music? And well, you know, they're doing all right with Apple Music. I mean, they've got 50 some million subscribers. So, you know, that's sort of like the big thing, right? Is their ecosystem really strong enough to pull people away from all these existing TV services, which, I mean, geez, there's tons of them. And, you know, like you're saying, you can already watch HBO through the Apple TV, right? Mm-hmm. You can already watch all these things. If I go to Prime Video, I can sign up for Showtime through that. And that's actually one thing that that is kind of, I mean, kind of disruptive. I mean, if you subscribe through Amazon Prime Video, you get Showtime for $10.99 instead of $12, which is what it costs through
really?
Xfinity.
It's cheaper.
Yeah, and honestly, I mean, just looking into this, today about this, I'm like, oh yeah, crap. I subscribed to that probably a year ago through mm-hmm. Amazon Prime, and I think that it was about $8. So, I don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure that price has been inching up while I haven't been paying any attention to it, and I've just been sending $11 every month to Amazon without even – I never even felt it, which is kind of like your iCloud fee, right? I mean, this is like Apple's kind of sneaky little way maybe of getting a cut of this revenue once a month. Maybe they just get 50 cents for every one, but if they have 10 million or somebody was predicting 100 million subscribers within 4 or 5 years, suddenly all those pennies start to add up.
Well, let me talk about this Bloomberg story. Let me talk about this Bloomberg story that I thought added a whole new angle to this story, and that is they said Apple is hammering out the final details of agreements to add movies and TV shows from HBO, Showtime, Stars, and others to their service because, as you pointed out, Lewis, when they launched the service, Apple doesn't have any content yet. All this content is not expected to be ready until the end of the year at the earliest. So they got to launch with something. So it sounded to me like, well, let me finish reading the story first. The negotiations allegedly would result in the shows from these services appearing side by side with Apple's own content, Showtime, etc. And they would share their subscription fees with these content producers like HBO and Showtime. So when I read that, I thought, okay, wait a second. Maybe the way it's going to work is you can pay Apple a fee, and that fee gives you access to, I don't know, HBO's content, Showtime's content, all the other content that Apple is negotiating to include in this service. Because if Apple weren't negotiating to include these channels inside their own service, then why? Well, let me phrase it this way. Why would HBO and Showtime not want Apple to include their content inside of Apple's new service if it's going to push more HBO and Showtime subscriptions? Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
It sounds like Apple is going to include their shows inside of their own service. You pay Apple, and then Apple shares the profit with them. Am I crazy for thinking that? That would be very alluring to me. If I could just pay Apple, I don't know, $15 a month, but I'll get access to HBO and Showtime. Does that sound totally outside the realm of possibility?
It does to me. I can't imagine them saying that. Oh yeah, sure. Let's just sell our stuff. Let's have a fire sale on our content and let's give Apple a slice of it. I mean,
That's why they haven't been able to lock down these deals yet, because Showtime and HBO are resistant to do this.
I just don't think that those people are going to do that. I mean, there are a la carte, well, not a la carte, but I mean, there's some of these, streaming TV services that are like $35 a month or $45 a month, and they've got a bundle of these things, but they're not usually including, I don't think they're ever including HBO and Showtime. I mean, it's just, it's weird. I'm completely confused about what it's going to be, and just I keep wondering, what are they going to do that's going to make this special? What are they going to do that's going to make anybody say, "Oh yeah, I need that more than I need Netflix"? I mean, they got to have a big library of stuff. Somehow they've got to have something that works better. I mean, what's wrong with the way that Netflix works?
Well, the working
works?
Better would be that would be what we're talking about, right? Which is the sort of how you pay for it, the subscription plan. And I wonder if they can get some kind of breakthrough there. That's really what they need to do, isn't it? Because I mean, so many, Netflix was kind of going this direction, wasn't it, years ago, where everyone gave their content, but then, all the big content providers, the movie studios, like ABC, Disney, they all pulled out, didn't they? So then, this is why Netflix was getting into making its own content, because they were really stuffed. Would they? Because, all of a sudden, Disney wanted you to subscribe to the Disney app in order to get the Disney content and so on and so forth. So, the big breakthrough would be somehow, was to pull in content from all these different sources. But I can't really see that happening for the reasons we discussed.
Yeah. I can't wait to see what they do. I mean, because they're having this big show. They're inviting, the world to take a look at this. They got to show something. They got to have something. They can't just say, oh, we we're working on TV shows. We'll get back to you. Now you're going to watch them.
Right.
Or why you would want to.
Well, do you remember when they launched the iTunes store? Did they have all of the big music publishers on board initially? Or did they had one big holdout, didn't they?
Oh, I don't remember.
Remember that?
You were probably there in the keynote, remember? Weren't you?
When was this? This was like 2002?
Was it that long ago?
Good God.
Wow.
Must have been making my head hurt.
2002, 2003.
Yeah, because of the iPod days when the iPod was popular. Wow. That's unreal.
I think they had like four out of the five big music publishers.
Yeah, but so all of that, I mean, that was a bitter pill for the music companies thought it was a bitter pill, right? Because, God, we can't sell an album. We're going to have to just only sell songs. Oh, my God, that's $1 instead of, 18 or whatever ridiculous amount it was.
Yeah, yeah.
But, they weren't saying, can we sell your songs for a penny? Or can we sell, we want to sell your records for only, I guess they did say we want to sell your records for only $10, right? So, so they did drop the price on that stuff, but
right. But the big difference then was the music industry was getting its lunch eaten by Napster and all the file sharing services.
Mm-hmm.
They were really in trouble because CD sales were falling off a cliff. I remember those stories at the time. CD sales were down like 20%. 30%. It was crazy.
Napster.
Right.
Right.
And so.
Yeah,
I saw an interesting graph the other day, that was looking at the music industry is making more money than ever.
Right.
The music industry, not artists, but the music industry is making
right now?
Yeah, much more than they ever made during the CD era was huge, wasn't it? Remember?
Uh-huh.
And that was making a lot of money for the music industry, but it's even bigger than the CD era.
How is that possible? Because no one's buying music anymore.
Product.
Yeah, right. And people are streaming like crazy.
Yeah, but streaming pays pennies. People, they don't make any money off streaming.
Well, the artists are hating it. The artists complain about it a lot.
Uh-huh.
But the record companies, I think are making bank.
Huh.
I think, the way the artists are complaining, the way it's that, the pie is cut up and their share of the pie, which has always been kind of wretched anyway.
Yeah.
The record companies are definitely seeing a lot more money than they used to, even during the CD era.
That is hard to believe. That is truly hard to believe.
I don't know. How many subscribers has Spotify got? Isn't it 80
million
or so?
Yeah, 70 million, 80 million. But yeah, how many times do they have to stream a song for it to make a dollar? Isn't it like, it's like 10,000 times, right?
Right.
I think it's more than 1,000. I think for every 1,000, they get like, I'm totally pulling this number out of my arse here, but it's something low that's like this. It's like 30 cents for every time a song is played 1,000 times. It's unbelievably low.
Well, Lewis, what kind of royalties are you getting from those Don Accordion recordings?
Oh my God, I don't. I don't get those
plays yet.
Every now and then, I get a check from CD Baby for this other band that I was in, called the Electric Boogie Dogs. Like every 3 months or so, I get a check for like $22.
Whoa! So they buy you lunch every 3 months.
Yeah, and at some point, I'm gonna have to send it to the guy who wrote all the songs.
You have to send it to him.
I'm gonna have to, yeah. Once we finally pay off the cost of producing all of our CDs, which I have sitting in my basement, by the way, if anybody wants one, just drop me a line. I'll send you a box.
You know what? I bet you some of our listeners would love a, what did you call them? The Boogie Dogs?
Electric Boogie Dogs.
Oh, sorry. ABD. Not acoustic.
Yeah, it's a little bit easier to just go ahead and listen to it on Apple Music, but honestly, I'll send you a crate of them.
Please.
Makes a nice coffee table.
You can build a fort out of them. Anyway, we're way off track. So it's gonna be interesting to see what they do, undoubtedly, because if they just go that Comcast route, like you were saying, and they're relying on the sheer number of Apple device users to bolster their subscription service, and they're not actually adding anything creative, I, for one, am going to be wholly disappointed. If they come out and he says, hey, y'all, look, and he's showing a unified Comcast-esque UI where you just see Apple's content next to HBO's, but you have to have an HBO subscription. Oh, and you also have to have a Showtime subscription.
Yeah,
and you also have to have CBS. I'm going to throw my hands up and be like, what were they thinking? This is not anything new or novel. And they've been working on this for so long. So my hope is that they have something truly special lined up. Otherwise, they wouldn't be flying in all these celebrities. you know, from all over the place to stand up on stage and pontificate about how their content is going to be so special that you're going to want to buy another iPhone. Lewis, let's talk about some of these other, maybe we can just run through these other services real fast since we've talked about this before. We have the news service and the magazine service.
Which may or may not be different things. I've everything I read, I mean, I don't know. I just can't tell. Well, I cannot tell if it's two different things.
Well, you know, read this out about the Apple News Service. Maybe this is how the video service will work as well.
Details about what exactly the new Apple News Service is actually going to look like, they're still murky. You know, rumors indicate this might cost $10 a month, $9.99. Might give readers access to unlimited articles from sites that usually put their content behind a paywall. We're talking about newspapers like New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post. These are all publishers that have been approached to join this service, and some of those companies have reportedly chafed at Apple's proposed 50-50 revenue split, which frankly seems pretty egregious. But then there's also this magazine aspect of it. Apple bought this service, this app called Texture last year. It lets users, subscribers, browse hundreds of digital magazines, $10 a month. So it's kind of a Apple Music all you can read, right? Apple Music for magazines. There's a developer named Steven Trotten Smith. He's uncovered evidence of this new magazine service and built into the Apple News app. This is, I think, in some of the betas that have come out lately. So we know it's coming. We know something's coming. Mm-hmm. And it only makes sense. I mean, they own Texture. They're going to have to fold in. You know, the idea is that they're going to fold this all into the Apple News app that, you know, it's currently free. And somehow, magically, through Apple, you know, cutting these deals or whatever, come up with a way that they can turn that into a moneymaker aside from just advertising, you know, and, you know, but...
Well, doesn't this sound like, you know, what we were just talking about?
I mean, I was just going to say, extrapolate the news service plan to the paywall of video, right? And you have HBO, Showtime, Apple's approaching them, and they're going to say, hey, we want to charge a flat fee for all of your content or maybe some of your content, and we'll share the content or we'll share the revenue with you. And they're balking at Apple, just like some of these big newspapers reportedly are, because Apple wants to bring them a whole new audience. I don't know. I feel like it might be a compelling offer. I mean, Apple's saying, hey, you have X number of subscribers. We'll give you access to this massive audience that we're going to be advertising to and marketing to. And we could be giving you a huge chunk of money that you might not otherwise have access to.
Right. Yeah.
But don't you think that the instant, like if Apple rolls out a thing that costs $10 a month.
Okay. And it has. So it's definitely not going to cost $10 a month. No way, right? Like it might be like 30. Because when I first said that, I was just making an example. But the more I think about this, I'm like, okay, imagine if Apple charged, I don't know, 30 or 40 or whatever a month, something that's much higher. So they have a much larger pool of money to draw from. And if someone wanted to get HBO, just HBO, they would still be interested in just buying HBO Go for $15 a month because Apple's service is so much more expensive. But there will be some people who say, oh, I would rather spend $40 a month and get access to Apple's content, HBO's content, Showtime's content, whatever content that Apple has brought in, and then Apple shares the revenue with them. That seems like it's actually something that could come to fruition.
I can't see all these companies just saying, yeah, we're going to give up our $10 a month $15 a month subscription to have some little piece of Apple's pie. I mean,
some little piece of pie. Yeah, have you seen Tim Cook's pie? Have you been to his home on Thanksgiving Day? Have you seen the pies that he makes when he comes out and he just kissed the cook apron? I will not have you speaking ill of Tim Cook. Not on this podcast, sir.
I don't know, man. You know, if they were, there have been some people saying, oh, well, what if there's like, you know, Apple Prime kind of thing where all of this is rolled into one thing, you know, music, video, all this news stuff. I mean, how much would that be worth a month or a year?
Well, how much is a basic cable? 40, 50, 60 bucks?
Yeah, so I think it's like 35, 45.
But, you know, because I know we're paying about 200 now for like, but that's for internet, cable, telephone.
Another one of those prices that just constantly goes up, you know, when you're not paying attention.
Um, I had somebody ask me the other day how he could lower his cable bill, because his cable bill, his internet bill was like $200-something, just like yours is, Leander. And I was like, wow, that's preposterous. And all you need to do, if you have Comcast especially, is just call them. This is going to sound crazy. Call them or talk to them in person, go into the office and say, my bill is too high. I want to keep my service, but my bill is too high. What can you do for me? And I all but guarantee you they will drop it significantly.
What?
All you have to do is ask. I'm dead serious. Just try it. Well, if it works for you, tweet me and tell me that it worked.
Okay. I mean, usually if I phone up and I say I'm going to quit, you know, I'm going to another, you know, AT&T. And then they say, oh, please don't go. You know, we can offer you this, this, and that. And then, they drop it. But you just go
in and
just
say it's too high. No, you got to call them and you got to say, I really like your service. I'm enjoying it. It's just too expensive. So I'm thinking about canceling it. And can we work something out? Can you drop the price for me? You know, make it seem like you're willing to leave so they connect you to the customer retention department.
Right. Well, you see, that's exactly what happens. Yeah, they go through some special department where you have like someone like, you know, the wolf. They just won't let you go. They keep bullying you. They keep harassing you. You know, they won't let you hang up.
This is a while ago. I called one of those car warranty services that you always hear advertised on different podcasts, because I was thinking about selling my old car because it was getting older, but I really loved it. But I didn't want to be on the hook. It was a BMW. I didn't want to be on the hook for the repairs because, you know, those cars, once they get a little bit older, they start breaking down left and right. In fact, I could tell you stories about things that broke on that car that you would not believe. I had the rear view mirror break. Did you even know that was possible?
I've pulled one up in my hand.
Oh, really?
Wow.
Well, you were probably in the middle of road rage. I just got into my car.
That's
my
chucked rear view... at someone. Some kids. They were like crossing. I was like, hurry up, kids.
Hit them right in the head. Right. And then you peeled out.
That'll land, yeah.
Out of my way. Anyways, I called one of these car warranty extension services, and I got the wolf, man. That guy would not let me get off the phone. No matter what I said, he was not going to lose that sale, because he told me that the extended warranty was going to cost like $5,000. And I was like, dude, you're out of your mind. I'm not paying you $5,000 for a warranty just in case my car breaks. If I have a really expensive repair, it's going to cost less than that. And finally, I was just laughing my ass off because he would not let me go. I was like, dude, I'm not interested. He's like, but wait. And he would go into some spiel. And finally, I just said, I'm going to hang up on you now. I'm hanging up. And he just kept talking, kept trying to sell me. And I'm like, okay, I'm hanging up now. I'm hanging up the phone. And I just hung up on him because he would not stop talking. It was one of the funniest, I was going to call it a telemarketing experience, but I called him. But it was one of the funniest sales experiences I've ever had in my entire life. That guy was not going to take no for an answer. I'm surprised he didn't come to my house afterwards.
Yeah, right.
He might be sitting outside right now.
I'm like, hey, Jim here. Remember that car warranty? Well, I'm here to talk to you about it.
I got a special price just today only. What would it take to sign you?
That's what he kept doing. He kept trying to sweeten the deal. And then he would try to spin it into, you're really going to regret it if you don't get this. Let me tell you about how often cars break and... Oh my gosh. I mean, I got to the point where I passed being annoyed that he was trying to sell me. And I actually started laughing. I couldn't stop laughing because it turned into a comedy routine. Let's see. I totally forgot where we were. I think that's everything, isn't it? Yeah. So magazines, news, and streaming television. And I'm excited to see what they announce. I'm not so interested in the news. Admittedly, I'm not so interested in the magazine subscription. But now I'm pretty... My interest is peaked. My interest is tweaked on that Apple TV streaming service. I'm excited to see what they do. Let's see. Before we dive into the Tim Cook book, the future best-selling Apple book by Leander Caney, let me thank Shaper for supporting this episode. Shaper takes networking from awkward to awesome. It's the number one professional networking platform that uses your experience, interests, and goals to help you make the right connections. Whether you're looking for investors, a co-founder, a new job opportunity, or just inspiring conversations, Shaper can connect you to professionals who truly want to share tips and help. Here's how it works. Each day, you open the app. It suggests 15 people to you with similar goals and interests for you to meet. Then all you have to do is swipe through them like you're using Tinder. You're like, this guy's lame. This guy's a genius. I would love to talk with him. This person looks like they have a lot of skills. I would like to learn from them. Swipe up. You want to meet them. And then you just set up coffee is with the people that stand out, and you can start building your professional network. It's crazy that, you know, when you get older, you got a job, you need help connecting with different people to further your career. And if you're a professional, I think that shaper should be installed on your phone. You should really give it a shot. It's really kind of cool. And it's a good service for people who are trying to build their skill sets and advance in their careers and make friends with people in their industries as well. So all you got to do is head on over to the App Store to download Shaper, or you can go to shaper.co to learn more about Shaper. You can download the app and improve the way you network. That's S-H-A-P-R, no E, S-H-A-P-R.co to learn more about Shaper. Leander, I really can't believe that it's finally time for this book to come out, because it's been so long that I actually stopped asking about it. But finally, the Tim Cook book, which is not actually what it's called, right? It has a much more polished title, which is similar to your Johnny Ive book, yeah. Which is the name that I can never remember.
I'm already getting grief about it, but it's Tim Cook, the genius who took Apple to the next level.
The next level, y'all.
And people are complaining about the word genius.
Couldn't think of a different word, huh?
Well, yeah, we did. You know, there was a lot of brainstorming, and we were going back and forth about different titles, and you know, I definitely raised the objection because it sounded kind of like the Johnny Ive one. You know, it's just like, oh my,
yeah,
genius this, genius that. You know, everyone's a genius. But I think it's true. And actually, there was a quote, you know, from one of Apple's designers, Doug Satzka, who said Tim Cook is a genius at operations. So it's, you know, it's something that his colleagues actually call him.
Well, I mean, think about how complex it must be to manufacture all these products in an on-demand fashion and ship them all over the world. Oh, yeah.
It's not an easy job. And in fact, you know, Cook has got none of the credit that he deserves for his career. You know, like, he actually had a big hand in saving Apple back in the late 90s, you know, when it was in danger of going bankrupt because of the work he did reforming their supply chain, you know, and their factories. I mean, they were really in deep trouble getting stuff made, and you know, they were going to go out of business, you know, and all the products that Steve Jobs was introducing at the time, you know, the iMac and the iBook and then later the iPod, you know, I mean, none of that stuff would have been possible without a really good solid operation, you know, manufacturing operation to support it. And of course, you know, he's been in the background for so long. He was always under Steve Jobs' shadow, and Jobs got all the credit for all this, but a lot of it has to go to Tim Cook.
You should have called it, if I were there in the room, Tim Cook, the operations wizard that took Apple to the next level. How do you like
that's
that?
Actually pretty
and then
good.
You could put him in like a little wizard cloak, put one of that a hat with a droopy top on it, right? With the stars all over it.
Like the Sorcerer's Apprentice. That's actually a great idea.
Man, there you go. And you could give him one of those long Gandalf beards. In fact, as long as we're daydreaming, you put him on a horse, like a white horse, like Gandalf was in Lord of the Rings, and have him in that tunic. Oh my gosh, that's a bestseller right there. Doesn't matter what's in the book.
Is the cover art already locked down, Leander?
It is, but you know, that sounds like a great. If anyone wants to make up some, you know, some fun Photoshop for us, that I publish those on the blog in a heartbeat. That sounds a fantastic idea. That, you know, that's a great, great idea.
Well, so when is the book coming out? I should ask first of all.
So April 16th is the publication.
Oh my gosh! So a month from now.
Yeah, and April 18th in the UK, and it's getting translated to all kinds of languages, like, you know, the Thai, Arabic, Russian, German, Italian, Spanish, Portuguese, Brazil, Turkish. There's a whole bunch of, you know, it looks like it's going to get translated into a whole bunch of different languages, which is really cool.
Are you going to go on some worldwide press tour too? You're probably just going to be doing incessant press.
No, I'm going to go to New York though for the week when it's getting launched, because we're doing a bunch of New York
That's
press.
It? Yeah. You're not going to Thailand, to Brazil, to Turkey?
Nah, I'd love to, but people don't do that kind of stuff anymore.
No, so you're just going to do, you're going to go to New York and just do a bunch of virtual press and then call it good, right?
Good buddy, yeah. But New York seems to be fine. I love going to that town, so.
Yeah, it's a fun city. So you've been working on this book for what, a year now?
Well, yeah. It was, when did I pitch it? I mean, it was actually really easy, you know, I hate to say this, it was kind of an easy pitch, right? I just wrote a couple of pages. The publisher, I mean, we had a conversation with the publisher initially on the telephone and, you know, just wrote a couple of pages, and then it got the commission to do it, and wrote it in about 6-8 months, And, you know, I really wanted to be published last fall. And because I delivered the book, like, you know, around that time, actually. But, you know, they're very strategic about when they launch. You know, books, I think, tend to launch in the spring. Because a lot of the book festivals and things like that, and book buyers, you know, the industry is always buying them around that time. And plus they want to have a long time to, like, sort of, you know, build it up with those people like Amazon, Amazon buyers, Amazon salespeople, you know, get them excited for what's going to be coming out. You know, so they do a lot of work behind the scenes on a book. So I don't know, there's a long lead time. Anyway, yeah, so I mean, long story short.
You told me when you were turning it in, and I was like, wait a second, when is it coming out? That was months and months and months ago.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, they got to proofread it and stuff. I'm like, how bad's your English? It's going to take them how long to proofread this book?
Yeah. It's a slow moving industry anyway. I mean, like, they're kind of surprised when I said, oh, yeah, I can do that. You know, they asked me to do something. And I was like, yeah, I'll have it done by tomorrow, a couple of days. You know, they're like, what? You know, they seem to expect it's going to take weeks. But yeah, you know, there's a lot of stuff behind the scenes that I'm not really party to, and I'm not really sure what's going on. You know, they have these big conferences. You know, they have, like, all these Amazon buyers. I mean, there's about 200 buyers, I think, for Amazon that they wine and dine at these fancy parties, and they have a big us site in Hawaii or something like that.
Oh,
and they're talking about the whole catalog, you know. And I mean, because the book industry, I think, puts out, I think, about 160,000 books a year, which is crazy, you know. And then if you look back on it, I mean, there's only a few dozen that actually make the bestseller list and actually do any good. It's even worse than the movie industry, you know. The movie, you know, like they sort of, you know, they commission a lot of stuff, and then they kind of decide afterwards what they're going to market and what they're going to put their budgets behind. Mm-hmm. And this one seems to be getting a lot of support internally, so they seem to be kind of like excited about it. I mean, I got to do so much work. I'm answering about 6 emails a day just from the team in New York.
6 emails? How are you keeping up?
Well, each one involves a bunch of work, you know, stuff I got to do. You know,
I'm doing so much work. You guys wouldn't believe it. I get six emails a day.
What I meant was, it's not crickets, you know. Like, there's like, it's not like there's no emails. You know, like, there's a bunch of people who are working on, like, promoting the book. So.
Do people, I'm not even joking, people are reaching out to me to get to you, Leander. In fact, there is a prominent person in the industry who reached out to me and said, hey, how's it going? Hey, it's been a long time since I talked to you. Real great to talk to you again. Hey, can you get me a copy of Leander's book?
Really?
I just got a message about that the other day, yeah. So I'll tell you who it was, and I think you should probably send it to him because, you know, you send it to everyone who has an audience who can promote your book and... you know, get some sales on that Amazon pre-order page. Is it up and running?
Yeah, the pre-order page is up, yeah.
We should just ask everyone who's listening to this show, even if you're not planning on buying the book, maybe we could get some reviews on the page. Wait, no. Is that even legal? Maybe I shouldn't say that. Is that something they allow? Yeah. Is that canvassing for reviews?
Stop right there. Yeah, no, that's okay, totally okay. A big no-no. They you know, Amazon pulls pages, that kind of stuff. No, oh, I mean, just... Oh, go buy the book. It's a great book. You're going to love it. I mean, I think there's a really good story to be told about Tim Cook. You know, I think he really is underappreciated, and I'm trying to rectify that. I'm actually looking forward to be talking about it because, you know, I mean, that 9to5 Mac did a story last week about the book coming out, and it was just a short story, you know, and I went back and I looked at the comments, you know, and there was a lot of negativity. I mean, people are like, they're saying the same thing. He's not a genius, you know. He's basically taken Steve Jobs' company and he's been and he's riding on Steve Jobs' coattails, you know, he's got and the same old narrative that he's like, you know, where's the next iPhone coming from? Where's the next iPad? Mm-hmm. You know, people are still very skeptical about his ability to, you know, of Apple to innovate under Tim Cook. But I think there's good answers for all of those questions. You know?
So are those things addressed in the book?
Yeah. Oh, totally. Okay. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. And, you know, we could talk about this in coming weeks because I think, you know, they're all pretty big topics. But, you know, I'm kind of looking forward to, like, to you know, I hope I change people's minds. I mean, I definitely came away with a much greater appreciation for him and what he has done for Apple that he wasn't given credit for and what he's doing for Apple now. And I think, you know, some of the stuff he's doing is really big and significant. And he's clearly his own man, you know. That's the other interesting thing, you know. Like he has not fallen into that trap where he's trying to be Steve Jobs. You know,
that's the thing I admire the most about him. Actually, that I mean, can you imagine you are trying to fill the shoes of one of the most iconic CEOs of all time, and he is the figurehead of this company, and now he dies, and it would be very difficult to be your own man in that shadow and try to run things the way that you want and not just try to do what Steve Jobs would want you to do.
Right.
which is probably, you know, what I would end up doing is like, what would Steve, I would have one of those bracelets. What would Steve Jobs do, you know, around my wrist?
And I know, probably, like a magic eight ball. Yeah. What would Steve do? Yes. Would Steve say yes? Would Steve say no?
Yeah. I mean, it would be very difficult. It looks like it's easy, but once you're in the position and you're the ones making the decisions and you have to figure out where to go next, you know, it's not easy.
No, absolutely.
Thing to do.
No, I think it must have been terrifying. You know, like I don't think, you know, who would want to, you know, follow Steve Jobs? Who'd want to step into those shoes? Nobody. You know, and I, and if you remember the time, I mean, there was so much, you know, there was all the entire pundit industry was against him, you know. No one, I don't think, came out and said that he was going to be good for Apple. Like, mm-hmm. you know, all the in the research I did, I mean, I looked it up, you know, all the stuff that people were saying, they were all negative, all of them, every single one. It was like, you know, he's the worst. You know, people wanted Johnny Ive to take over, right? But He wouldn't have been. I don't think, you know, anywhere near as effective as someone like Tim Cook. But it was all negative, and he had, I think, you know, like it just looked like he was going to fail. But I think, you know, like what is it, seven, 8 years now. You know, I think it's been remarkable the job he's done.
I kind of wanted Johnny Ive to be the next CEO too, but. I think what Tim Cook did was he took the focus off the one figurehead of the company and he tried to disperse it all throughout Apple.
Yeah.
So that people weren't just looking to that one person for a measure of Apple's future success like they were with Steve Jobs. And if you put Johnny Ive in that role, he was going to become the next idol. He was the one that was going to save Apple. He was the one that was going to be making all decisions in the minds of shareholders and right. the people at large who follow Apple.
Right.
And then if something happens to him or he leaves, well, now you're the same problem again.
Same thing again,
right?
Yeah.
So you needed to take that focus off that one person.
Right. That was always the problem. You know, Steve Jobs always embodied Apple, you know, and he got all the credit. People thought he dreamed up the iPhone, which is, you know, the truth is far, far from, you know, is...
He didn't wake up in the middle of the night and start scribbling on a napkin.
Right, exactly. And he's like, hey, Johnny, I've got something for you. Get over here.
Here, make this.
And he's like, what? Steve, I don't know. And then Steve just broke it down for him over the dinner table. And then,
just do it, Johnny.
Right.
So, and that one maneuver saved Apple.
It's always been like a, you know, a team. It's always been a team effort. But, you know, Jobs, you know, kind of for various different reasons. But, you know, he kept it, you know, he sucked up all the credit for everything that Apple did. You know, no one really knew anything about the team. And I think that's you know, Tim Cook's. And the biggest difference, you know, like between the two is that... you know, Jobs wasn't really that good at getting people to work together. Mm-hmm. He got people to work against each other. Mm-hmm. You know, it was very competitive inside Apple. You know, he had like Tony Fadell fighting with Scott Forstall, and he had like the, you know, the iPod team against the human interface team to try and compete to see who would like develop the next, you know, whatever came after the iPod, which sent it to the iPhone. Everything was really secretive. All these different, you know, no one knew what the other team was doing. It was, you know, and there was a lot of drama. There was a lot of screaming, a lot of shouting, a lot of like backstabbing, burnout. And Cook has been, you know, like the opposite. He's been very much about collaboration. And I think people sort of think, well, you know, it sounds a bit wishy-washy, but you know, like in this day and age, when if you look at the whole Apple is like an ecosystem play, isn't it? I mean, they're trying to integrate. Not just software and hardware, but services too, you know, and this announcement at the end of the month with this, you know, TV service, all this content they're going to be bringing to the platform. When you've got 1 billion users, you know, there's a huge opportunity in getting revenue, subscription revenue, you know, monthly, reliable monthly revenue mm-hmm. at a huge numbers of people. So as iPhone sales flatten, you know, it's not a growth market anymore. It's not a break. You know, it was like a hockey stick, wasn't it, for so many years. They enjoyed that. It's a mature market now globally. And, you know, they're not going to go back to those old days of these massive, you know, 2X, 10X growth. So they've got it's going to be an ecosystem play. And I think, you know, a collaborative approach where you have all these different, you know, domains, all the different divisions of the company working together is, you know, it's the only way it's going to be successful. And Cook is really good at that.
It's interesting because what Steve Jobs did, pitting people against each other, it worked so well.
Well, I don't know if it did.
Really, I mean, it created some pretty iconic products that were heads and tails, leaps and bounds, quantum levels better than other people's products. And I kind of wonder if he could have created those products under an environment of collaboration because
because
end up with a company full of bozos when you're too nice.
The stories I heard was that they were collaborating behind his back. You know, like Johnny Ive was inviting the software guys. He had Baz Ording, you know, one of the top software human interface guys, secretly come into the design studio, and he was showing him all the hardware designs, knowing that that stuff would go into the software design. And if Jobs had seen it, he would have thrown a fit. There's all these stories about all the, you know, people at Apple working behind Jobs' back. And the first Mac, right? Remember, it had too little memory. So they ended up, the engineer, Burrell Smith, you know, added extra memory. And it turned out to save that product. Because, you know, the thing was a bomb. It was so slow and it was so underpowered that but they had to come out with a new version real quick, you know. And luckily, the hardware engineer had expressly ignored Jobs's, you know, orders and put the capability to add more memory to the, onto the hardware. So this is a long story. Like a lot of times, you know, people who work for Jobs disobeyed him to save him from himself. Anyway. Mm. So, you know, I know that they were collaborating behind the, you know, behind his back or like under his nose without telling him, you know, and because they knew it was better for the company and better for the products.
Well, is there a pre-order page available for this book? Is it up at Amazon yet?
Yeah, it's on Amazon. So okay. If you go to Amazon and search for Tim Cook.
Okay. We should, I'll put it in the show notes too. And we should have mentioned, I think this is one of the only Tim Cook books that exists, right? Am I right?
I haven't looked, but you know, definitely at the time, you know, someone might've come out with a quickie one. But yeah, this is the only one, that's, the full length blog fee that I know of.
Yeah. And that's why I think one of the reasons people are so interested in it already and, starting to ping even me asking for copies of the book. Like I had some early access or something. I'm like, wow, you must truly be desperate if you're reaching out to me.
It's kind of weird. I mean, like my email is not exactly a secret.
No, I know. And it's like, why would you, anyone can email you, you know, like it's on Cult of Mac, isn't it? I think they can just reach out to you. Anyway. I thought that was really funny. Especially to promote your book. Like, who's going to say no to that?
Yeah. Well, who was it?
Dr. Disaster.
I don't want to say here.
Was it Dr. Disaster?
It was Dr. Disrespect, yeah.
Oh, Disrespect, yeah, Disaster.
Dr. Disaster.
Oh, geez, what a disaster.
No disrespect meant. Oh, he would crush you, Lewis. I can't believe it. You better hope he doesn't hear this. He's going to show up at your house.
Save me. Cut it out.
All 6'8". And when you see that mustache about a foot and a half above your head, you're going to have a little pee-pee come out, I guarantee you. All right, well, let's go ahead and wrap it up there. We can do more Tim Cook stuff next week because I think there's a lot more interesting discussion to have. I could just keep going with us, but we need to go ahead and wrap it up there. That's all the CoolCast we have for you guys this week. But if you want to come say hi or reach out to us about any of the stories we mentioned on today's show, we're all on Twitter. I'm at Airfon. Leander is at L. Caney. Lewis is at Lewis Wallace. This has been the CoolCast, the best 30-plus minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the CoolCast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys. We're doing this, Tim Cook. Next time, y'all!
Tim! What are you doing here?
You guys are going to love my book and my turkey. I'm going to have some Thanksgiving turkey recipes in the back of the book. And every book comes with a free Kiss the Cook apron. There you go. Boom. You said you needed a marketing idea.
Oh, my God.
Boom.
All right. We're going to do that.
Pre-orders. Every pre-order gets a free Tim Kiss the Cook apron. You got to get the rights to use his face on it, though.
Well, maybe we can use that animoji. And we can just use that, what you just recorded. You can make an animoji plug for the book.
There you go. Hey, we could do a Tim Cook ringtone too. Do people still use ringtones?
Hey y'all,
ring ring y'all, phone's ringing. I'll give that to you absolutely free. You could hand that out, a digital reward for all pre-orders.
Okay.
I don't know. Do people even use ringtones anymore?
I haven't heard one for a long time now.
That's like a relic from the early days of iPhone. You know. Remember they used to have like a tool that you could use, like make your own ringtones.
Oh yeah, people want to buy them, didn't they?
Remember Verizon used to like sell ringtones to people. Oh my gosh, that was the brilliance of the iPhone, is it broke out of all of that nonsense that you used to have to. The devices were 100% locked down, and you had to pay the carrier to do anything. And then the iPhone came along, and you could actually use your phone like you would use a computer. You can install ringtones and browse the internet and stuff. Those are amazing days.
Browsing internet stuff, right?
We started this podcast during the golden days of iPhone. You know, we rode that hockey stick all the way up, and we peaked right when they did.
And it's all done over now. Now on.